The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of this lust. Through them, lust covers the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders him. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The enemy has captured different strategic positions in the body of the conditioned soul, and therefore Lord Krishna is giving hints of those places so that one who wants to conquer the enemy may know where he can be found. Mind is the center of all the activities of the senses, and thus, when we hear about sense objects, the mind generally becomes a reservoir of all ideas of sense gratification, and as a result, the mind and the senses become the repositories of lust. Next, the intelligence department becomes the capital of such lustful propensities. Intelligence is the immediate next-door neighbor of the spirit soul. Lusty intelligence influences the spirit soul to acquire the false ego and identify itself with matter, and thus with the mind and senses. The spirit soul becomes addicted to enjoying the material senses and mistakes this as true happiness. This false identification of the spirit soul is very nicely explained in the Srimad Bhagavatam 10:84:13. A human being who identifies this body made of three elements with his self, who considers the byproducts of the body to be his kinsmen, who considers the land of his birth worshipable, and who goes to the place of pilgrimage simply to take a bath rather than meet men of transcendental knowledge there, is to be considered like an ass or a cow.
So, if we want to make progress in spiritual life, we cannot neglect the enemy. It's one thing to try to find out spiritual objects to concentrate on, to meditate on. But the other factor is that at the same time, we're being attacked by Nityavairina, our eternal enemy, which, in the form of lust, it burns like fire. Therefore, we can't simply ignore it. Chanakya Pandit says three things must be extinguished immediately: death, disease, and fire. If there's a little fire in a corner of your house, you cannot neglect it thinking it's small fire. Well, because small fire can become big fire very quickly. So we may think, well, it's only a little less. Not so, don't worry about it. No. As we heard earlier, Krishna says, even one of the senses on which one dwells can carry away the mind of even an intelligent man, just like the wind can sweep a boat. Therefore, we have to be very careful about lust. We cannot ignore it. It's a battle. It's like when one is fighting with an enemy, he has to recognize the enemy. He cannot say, well, they're not very significant. You may say they're not significant, but who can say that lust is not a significant enemy? If we look in the history, even great conquerors such as Caesar, he was captivated by Cleopatra and swept off his steed. There are so many examples of great, powerful personalities But lust is very strong. Okay, next verse.
Text 41. Translation. Therefore, O Arjuna, best of the Bharatas, in the very beginning, curb this great symbol of sin, lust, by regulating the senses, and slay this destroyer of knowledge and self-realization. Purport.
There's a question there.
What is the difference between lust and envy? We can say one who is envy, he is lusty, or one who is lusty, he is envy.
Envy refers to being very unhappy at the success of others, or at the possessions of others, or the achievements of others. One can't tolerate that someone else is successful. That's envy. And lust, he may a lusty man, he may not care that others are succeeding, but when he sees an object of lust, such as a woman or something like that, he's captivated. He's swept off his feet by the desire to enjoy his senses. Okay? Does that clarify?
And they relate. It's just like a brother and sister.
Pardon?
It's like a brother and sister. I mean, they're relative and close. How do they relate? How does one connect? How does, because the root cause of false ego is, you know, false pride and what is it, fame?
Well, the beginning.
And then it turns into sex desire.
Yeah, the beginning is that we're envious of Krishna. The first object of envy is the Lord Himself. We can't stand that He's getting all the beautiful damsels are attracted to Him. He's so powerful. He's so influential. He has so much wealth. He's such a wonderful musician. He's so intelligent. So we become envious. I can also do those things. I can also be very powerful. I can lift weights. You see these men after they lift weights and they pose for photos. Of course, Krishna doesn't have to have muscles like that. But they think if I have these big muscles, then I'll be very strong. And I'll be able to attract women and so many things. So this is the principle of envy, wanting to be the cynosure, the center of attraction. Question?
Question from Manchester, UK. How should we remember Krishna if we don't know him properly?
Well, that's the point. We have to know, learn. Can we move this stand here a little bit? We have to learn to know him. A devotee asked Prabhupada once, he said, if you could speak with the leaders of the United States for just a few minutes, what would you tell them if they wanted to hear what you have to say? So Prabhupada replied that, I would tell them that your country has a nice slogan, In God We Trust. Well, we will teach you who God is and how to trust Him. Then your country will be very good. But right now, you don't know who God is. And because you don't know who God is, why should you put your trust in someone you don't know? Therefore, this information is what the Krishna Consciousness Movement is giving. Who God is and how to trust him.
Because we are envious to Krishna, therefore we are here. And can we say that this envy is the source of our lust? Because we are envious to Krishna, we want to enjoy.
Yeah, it begins with envy. And we have to give up this envy towards Krishna. If we give up envy towards Krishna, then we'll be free from lust. Because when Krishna is enjoying, we shouldn't think, oh, I would like to enjoy like that. No, that's wrong. We shouldn't think like that. It's not for us to enjoy like that. That is a perverted desire. When Krishna is enjoying with his gopis or his queens, we should be delighted. Oh, this is only for Krishna's pleasure. Like I was speaking this morning about betel nuts. Krishna is enjoying betel nuts, very nice, let him enjoy. Not for me. Devotee doesn't, he thinks, how can I enjoy with this rotten material body? It's not meant for enjoying those things. Prabhupada said, there's one video, you may have seen the early Hare Krishna video. Because when a young boy sees a beautiful flower, he thinks, oh, what a beautiful flower, let me give it to my girlfriend. When a devotee sees a nice flower, he thinks, oh, what a beautiful flower, let me offer it to Krishna. That's the difference. Because if he offers it to the girlfriend, then he's placing himself in the center. He wants to attract her to himself. Whereas a devotee, he wants to attract... He wants to offer everything to Krishna for his pleasure. And he wants to bring everyone to Krishna, not for his pleasure, but to be attracted to Krishna. I was speaking with one person. He had the wrong idea about marriage. He was thinking, he said, I want this woman to be attracted to me first, and then Krishna second. I told him, no, that's not right. It's not going to work. He said, first, you should make the woman attracted to Krishna, and then naturally she'll be attracted to you also because you're a servant of Krishna. But he tried it the other way and it didn't work. So because why didn't it work? Because how attractive are we? How attractive is a bag of stool? Go ahead.
The spirit soul is the person who has the lusty propensity. And then the spirit soul, for instance, myself, I have a tendency to engage in using some type of intoxicant and when the effects of that intoxicant, they seem to increase my lusty propensity. So, what is the relationship between the desire, the lusty desire, and the activities that are done out of lust that increase our feeling of lust?
Yes, when the desire is strong enough to increase the lusty desire, then super soul says, aha, you wanted to increase your lusty desire. Here's a nice drug. Here's some nice intoxication. Here's a nice club you can go. This will increase. Here's a movie you can watch. These things will increase your lusty desires. You wanted more? Here, you can get more. Man proposes, God disposes. Even if it's something bad, Krishna, he fulfills our desires. Napariya gachchukram makayam abrinam rasnam viram shudam apapaviram kabir mani si paribhu svayambhur yatata yator vidijak chatspidisam. Yeah. Lord is the self-sufficient philosopher who is awarding everyone's desire since time immemorial. So, whatever the living entity wants, Krishna will fulfill that. But, the person has to take the consequences. He has to take the reaction.
Continue. Purport. The Lord advised Arjuna to regulate the senses from the very beginning so that he could curb the greatest sinful enemy, lust, which destroys the urge for self-realization.
So what does it mean to curb the sense, to regulate the senses? It means that if one is very desirous to indulge in sex life, then he can do that within marriage, sacred marriage, for a child. That's the, you can say that's the license. Just like, of course it's not a very good system, but most rural areas, they have hunting season. And they allow persons to go out hunting, but and you have to get a license, and you can't just kill unlimited animals. You can kill a certain number only. There's a limit. Or if you go fishing in some places, they say, there's a limit. So, or even when you're going to a bar, the limit is you're not supposed to get what they call, you know, filthy drunk or, you know, completely. You're supposed to be able to control so that you can walk out and you don't, you can, things like that. So there's some regulation. Also, the government says you can drink, but you have to be over 21. Because a person over 21 is supposed to have some ability to use his intelligence in drinking. So, same thing. You want to have sex life? Okay, you can have it. Well, what do you have to do? First you have to get married, get a license, and then you have to have a desire to have a child, and then you have to wait till the right time, and then you can have sex. That's the regulated senses. And if someone doesn't want to do that, if he says, no, I don't want to restrict myself, okay, you can break the law. But what happens when you break the law? You get punished. You get captured. So he breaks the law, and next life, he doesn't get a human form again. He becomes a pigeon or a monkey or some creature like that, where he can have sex more than the humans, and there's no sin involved. He didn't want to follow the law, so now he loses the chance for higher understanding, for self-realization. Therefore, it says here, the killer, what is it? The destroyer of self-realization, and what else? Knowledge. Yes. That's a good point. Lust is the destroyer of knowledge and self-realization.
Another question from Manchester, UK. Christians argue that the commandment, thou shalt not kill, is meant for humans only. In the Bible it says it's okay to eat meat, but Prabhupada says it's aimed at all living entities. Can you explain that?
There's other statements in the Bible too. God says, don't bring me your burnt offerings. I will not accept them. He doesn't want them anymore. In the Christian, in the old church, they had this big burnt offering altar. There's a picture of it. And they would bring right in the temple, right just on the right of the temple, just like right there, they had this big thing, and you'd bring up the animal, this big, like a ram or something like that, and they'd burn it and kill it right there. So God says, I don't want these things, your burnt offerings. So you have to read the whole thing, and you have to be careful about misinterpretations by those who are attached to eating meat. We never hear of Jesus eating meat. They try to speculate that he must have eaten fish, and he must have eaten lamb at the Passover, but there's no statement to that effect. It's all
innuendos and speculation. But the question is, if he was so fond of eating meat, then why did he stop the animal selling that was going on in the temple? He stopped it. They were selling animals, bringing animals for a sacrifice to get free from sins. And he stopped it physically.
You were talking about if we develop the mindset of wanting to enjoy, I can't remember what you said exactly, but something like sex life or to enjoy the senses, then we get a body of an animal that's more suitable. What I'm wondering is that if we develop some attachment for Krishna consciousness, like we see some devotees that are definitely attached to Krishna consciousness, like they have to come sometimes and associate, or else they just wouldn't, even for Sundays, or they may be practicing devotional service sometimes because that's what they really want to do. But then, because of their attachments, sometimes they engage in sense gratification. So, if someone has some attachment for Krishna consciousness, it seems like if they were put in the body of an animal, then they wouldn't be able to fulfill that propensity to serve Krishna and worship the deity and perform devotional service. So, if we have just even 1% of some attachment to practicing devotional service, does that guarantee that we would get a human form so we can continue that at least 1%?
Well, yes, generally speaking, if one does some devotional service, he's guaranteed a human form in the next life. But there may be exceptions. Bharat Maharaj became a deer. Now, it's also stated in the Bhagavad Gita that one who performs a little bit of yoga practice, makes some progress, he takes his next birth in the heavenly planets. And he gets to enjoy there for a long time. So what you're describing is a person who likes Krishna, but also likes sense gratification, so that's a suitable life for the heavenly planets. They like Krishna, but they also like sense gratification.
Read the Mahabharata, you find that actually to go to the heavenly planets is not a joke. I mean, you really have to be following strictly and be really in the mode of goodness. If you commit sinful activities, Prabhupada said you're not even a human being.
Ah, that's a good point. Yes, it's not that I commit sinful activity and then think I'm still going to the heavenly planets. No, very pious. Pious, but still sakama. He has desire, but he wants to do it according to the plan of the Lord. He's not ready to give it all up yet. Yes, sinful activity is called there's akarma, karma, and vikarma. Vikarma is activities that is against the scriptural injunctions, and that leads one to a hellish future.
Another question from Manchester, UK. I heard we should only see Krishna and his energy. What would that energy be?
I don't know where you heard that you should only see Krishna and his energy, singular. But we see Radha Krishna. Radharani is his energy, Hala. And Sitaram. Sita is the energy of Lord Ramachandra. So these are the Lakshmi Narayan. And we see everything in relationship with Krishna. Parashya Shakti Vividhai Vishuyute. All the energies that we see, the fire, Krishna says that he's the fire. He's the brilliance of the fire. He's the light of the sun, the light of the moon. He's the sound and ether. So all the energies are Krishna.
but they're his separated energy. So we see Krishna and his energies everywhere. Shakti, Shakti Matayor of Abheda. One?
Jnana refers to knowledge of self as distinguished from non-self. Or in other words, knowledge that the spirit soul is not the body. Vijnana refers to specific knowledge of the spirit soul's constitutional position and his relationship to the Supreme Soul. It is explained thus in the Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.31, Jnanam parama guhyam me yad vijnana samanvitam sarahasyam tarangam cha guhyana garitam maya. The knowledge of the self and supreme self is very confidential and mysterious, but such knowledge and specific realization can be understood if explained with their various aspects by the Lord Himself. Bhagavad Gita gives us that general and specific knowledge of the self. The living entities are parts and parcels of the Lord, and therefore they are simply meant to serve the Lord. This consciousness is called Krishna consciousness. So from the very beginning of life, one has to learn this Krishna consciousness, and thereby one may become fully Krishna conscious and act accordingly. Lust is only the perverted reflection of the love of God, which is natural for every living entity.
So that answers the question. What is lust? Lust is love for God that gets perverted. It's meant for Krishna. So all these advertisements, when they have they try to incite the lust by putting a beautiful man or woman on the billboard. The idea is they're trying to incite our lust towards the objects of the senses, but really it should be directed towards Krishna. Everything should be, all of our love should go to Krishna.
Question from me. It says here that vijnana refers to specific knowledge of the spirit soul's constitutional position and his relationship to the Supreme Soul. But I've read some places in Prabhupada's books that vijnana refers to realization as opposed to jnana meaning knowledge.
Yeah, that's the idea of knowing that one is spirit soul, that's jnana. But, so what is the spirit soul? If someone says, Aham Brahmasmi, I'm spirit, and you say, okay, what's a spirit? And he says, I don't know. Then his knowledge is not realized. Whereas if you say, oh, what is the Brahman? What is the spirit? Jivar Swarup Hoy Nityara Krishna Das. I'm the servant of Krishna. That's my constitutional position. That's realized knowledge.
So would vijnana also include one realizing their swarup?
That's a higher stage of vijnana, yes.
Uh-huh.
At least if we understand first that we're the servant of Krishna, and then later as one advances, and which servant of Krishna and how one serves Krishna is revealed.
And then a question from North Carolina. Being in a female body, one of the things that bothered me when I first came to Krishna consciousness and reading about women seem to be such a bad influence on the men. It doesn't bother me so much now, but when I read about these things, am I to think that this is about all women as a whole? Maybe this is, that's it basically.
Well, one has to understand that the female body, how it affects the male body. It's not anything against any particular group. It's just, this is the laws of nature and it's not something that's surprising if we see that as soon as they, the males and females, come in close proximity, then they become attached. And that attachment turns into lust. Jayato vishaya pungsa sangateshu pajayate. Sangat sanjayate kama kama krodha pajayate. So by contemplating the objects of the senses, one develops attachment. From that attachment, lust develops. From lust, anger arises. So one has to curb it in the very beginning. That's the point of this. And the male is a specific, the male body is specifically meant for self-realization. And so if he's going to use this form of life for self-realization, then he has to be careful about the association with the objects of the senses. So, in answer to the question, yes, one should think, okay, I have this body, and on one hand, my duty is to assist a male. I'm supposed to work under the direction of a male. That's the female. But at the same time, I'm an individual spirit soul, just like everyone else, just like the male. So therefore, my real goal is self-realization. I'm doing this not for something material, but I'm doing it for self-realization. Because this is the best means for me to make spiritual advancement. Prabhupada wrote me a letter once. He said, women have a very difficult time without being married to make advancement in spiritual life. So it's a good policy for them if they can get a good husband, Krishna conscious husband. And then they will be able to advance more easily.
I've noticed that at least some of the females here that I've seen in the city of Kansas City, they have these... they do these things like wear shoes with big high heels, and they can't walk very well, and they wear, you know, like some short skirt that they can't move very well in, and they put paint on their face, and even old ladies, they go, 80 years old, they go and get their hair done. You know, they have only a few hairs left, but they have some addiction to getting it curled or something. Are these some putting themselves in such ridiculous situations, are these signs of less intelligence?
I think the less intelligence is a person who's taking very meticulous note of all these things. And that's why they do it. Both are less intelligent. The ones who behave that way to attract, and those who become attracted.
I'm not attracted.
You want to go on record to say that you're not attracted?
No, I'm repulsed at it. It seems like, you know, impractical. These impractical things are like, you know.
Yes, you may be repulsed at certain times when you're in your best state, but when you're, let's say, a little bit in a weakened state, a little disturbed, then those techniques, they work. When someone is not, let's say he's tired or angry or upset or frustrated or stressed out, then he may be attracted by those things.
I'm doing some comment. Yeah, actually, it is one kind of like that Maya, because entities that do not want become old, you know. That's why he so many makeup and etc.
I didn't understand that.
No, he's saying some, you know, this old man making makeup, you know, some putting garlands and this, etc. Old lady. So actually, because I'm telling why, so they did not want to become old. He did not agree. So that why he saw some makeup, etc. Then he becoming young, that's like that.
They want to be eternally young.
Yeah.
Yes, like in the spiritual world, but of course they only have this body to work with, so it's they try their best with cosmetics to make it look young. But if you give them knowledge that you are young eternally in the spiritual world, you get your eternal youthful body, why don't you go back there? Then they'll turn their attraction towards Krishna. And instead of putting on makeup, they'll put on tilak, 13 places. Om Keshavaya Namaha, Om Narayanaya Namaha, Shishigonitai Ki Jai, Srimad Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai.